I think it's time to move on to talking about Interstellar, because we've procrastinated enough. We should return to our true calling, which is talking about Christopher Nolan. But, as always, we've got a clip.
Nolan is a great kid. She's really bright. But she's been having a little trouble lately. She brought this in to show the other students the section on the lunar landings.
Yeah, that's one of my old textbooks. She always loved the pictures.
It's an old federal textbook. We've replaced them with the corrected versions.
Corrected?
Explaining how the Apollo missions were fake to bankrupt the Soviet Union.
You don't believe we went to the moon?
I believe it was a brilliant piece of propaganda that the Soviets bankrupted themselves, pouring resources into rockets and other useless machines.
Useless machines?
And if we don't want a repeat of the excess and wastefulness of the 20th century, then we need to teach our kids about this planet, not tales of leaving it.
You know, one of those useless machines they used to make was called an MRI. And if we had any of those left, the doctors would have been able to find the cyst in my wife's brain before she died instead of afterwards. And then she'd have been the one sitting there listening to this instead of me, which had been a good thing, because she was always the calmer one.
That was
always the calmer one.
Okay, we're gonna limit ourselves to as few jokes as possible about that. But anyway, Interstellar is playing in an hour's time at the York Student Cinema, but you probably get down there a bit early because it's probably going to be quite crowded because it was the biggest film of last year.
It's also playing tomorrow as well.
It is also playing tomorrow, which is when I will be seeing it, maybe, possibly, hopefully. Liam and I have wildly differing views on both Interstellar and Nolan. So instead of just jumping into argument, I thought what we'd do would be to review it. Liam, go first.
Okay, so brief synopsis of Interstellar. Sort of Earth and humanity are almost in their death throes. These giant, tremendous dust clouds are sort of ravaging the Earth and crops and life. And the only thing that really can grow anymore is corn. And that seems to be sort of on its way out as well. Michael Caine and a team of scientists sort of start a project to send Matthew McConaughey, Anne Hathaway and two other scientists into space to go through a wormhole and sort of scout out potential worlds that may be able to sustain our life. I mean, first of all, I've got to say that is, if you like aesthetics, see this film. I say it's got some brilliant spectacles. I mean, there's these giant billowing dust storms and these great scenes sort of inside cars as it sort of, you know, fills up in all the cracks in the windows and such. And there's sort of the shots of the wormhole and the black holes look brilliant, I think, anyway, and the planets as well. And also something that bears mentioning is the design of the robots in the film. It's really interesting and inventive. I've never seen sort of robots and androids done like this in any kind of way. So it's a generally good film, but for me, I was really enjoying it, and then Anne Hathaway makes a speech about love, and I physically felt my opinion of the film plummeting. I thought, oh God, no, oh no, because it's just like it's a corny and just badly thought out speech as is, and then Anne Hathaway makes it worse. I think Anne Hathaway is the worst thing in this film, and you know, sorry Anne Hathaway, I know she listens to this, and she's probably going to be really torn up about this.
She's going to be distraught.
But
I'm sorry.
Overall. Despite that bad speech and the few moments of Anne Hathaway making just reading bad dialogue, it did claw its way back up to a thumbs up, I felt, overall. I think the best way to summarise it is there were 3 points in the film where I almost cried, but I never felt enough emotion that I actually cried. It's like it's okay, but it's not great. I really like visuals, so I really like aesthetic and visuals and spectacle and stuff, and I think Nolan does that really well, if anything. That's my review.
Fantastic. Well, okay, so following on from that, I will not dispute the visual side of it. I want to briefly say that I think the visual side of it is nothing to do with Christopher Nolan. I want to say the visual side of it is because of his cinematographer for this film, which is a new cinematographer, after he's collaborated for something like 12, 14 years with Wally Pfister, who's a great guy, really great at his craft, but this one was the first time, because Pfister was off making Transcendence, which was a bad movie. He collaborated with Swedish cinematographer Hoyt van Hoytema, who is an absolute genius, and he was director of photography, cinematographer, same thing, I think, for Her, for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, for Let the Right One In, and then for a couple of other things. And all of those films have an absolutely fantastic visual aesthetic. I mean, it's they just look gorgeous. And I think I can sense his hand in an awful lot of Interstellar's gorgeous shots. I mean, and it is true that some of the later scenes, I don't usually get sort of emotional over films, but for something purely visual to create a strong emotional response is quite something quite special, and Interstellar does do that. Unfortunately, and having said that, it has an awful lot of problems. The last 25 minutes is just garbage, and I can't spoil it too much, and we're not going to do spoilers because it is very much a film that can be spoiled. But it gets into the realm of when Anne Hathaway makes a speech about love early on, you dread it returning in some shape or form, and yet part of you knows that that's going to happen. And yes, it does return, and I'm not going to explain how, but generally, the problems of humanity are solved with love. And while that is okay in campy science fiction and in sort of, you know, soft science fiction, Nolan was going for gritty and dark with this. He's making his money off the back of, no, he's making this film off the back of the Batman films and Inception. Now, these are gritty films. Like, they're not cheery. Inception is incredibly depressing, a lot of it. And the Batman films offer a pretty nasty worldview as well. So, I don't think he can just sit there and be like, time for serious space drama, and then solve it with Love Conquers All. It's not really a spoiler to say that, because it's way more complicated than that. And I'm simplifying to aid my argument and make me sound cleverer. But it is a problem with it. Also, Anne Hathaway's performance is the film goes after about the halfway mark. There's one point about a third of the way through, which is absolutely fantastic, and it never gets quite that good anymore. For anyone who knows, I'm talking about the big wave. So really what you get is a sci-fi film with an interesting premise, some gorgeous visuals, and a plot that goes totally off the rails. And that to me is depressing, really, because you need it. You need that plot there. You can't just... Film is a visual medium, but it's not just visual. It's narrative, and you can't just abandon that. And abandon that they do.
Okay. First on visuals, I've got to say, it's not just his cinematographer. Physicist Kip Thorne wrote algorithms that did a large part of the visuals for the sort of the stuff in space, so the stars, the black holes, traveling through the black hole, the wormhole, and all that. And that looks good as well. And that's mostly done down to this physicist guy Kip Thorne, who Nolan worked with. I'd say on the matter of love, I mean, on the surface it does sound very corny, but I felt the film sort of explored like this idea of, you know, what's a $10 word, filial piety or something, I don't know, so boring like that, the idea of family love.
I have no idea what that means.
Being this powerful thing, I think it explores it pretty well, because it's like, it's got Matthew McConaughey considering just allowing this human race to sort of wither away and die so he can spend a bit more time with his daughter. And it's got like there's a bit with surprise Matt Damon shows up, which I was pleased by. I didn't know he was in it. I like
He's
Matt Damon.
A good actor.
I was pleased with surprise Matt Damon. And his character, I don't want to spoil anything, but the stuff he does is sort of does explore the darker side of like desiring to be together with people and being in a community. So I wouldn't say it's entirely sort of, you know, corny and simplistic in that. There is a darkness to the love that it discusses, I would say. But that might just be my interpretation and me giving a bit of leeway.
This is the point where we're going to differ, and unfortunately we can't argue about it too much. Mm-hmm. But Matt Damon, to me, was the point at which the film moved into the realm of the stupid and the unconvincing and the campy and the silly. And I forgot one more thing that I usually moan about. 2001 A Space Odyssey is an amazing film and one of the best of all time, probably the best science fiction film of all time, in my opinion. And Interstellar is not only paying homage, it is... frankly, ripping off large chunks of 2001 and reusing them. There are 5 to 7, I counted, numbers where it directly visually copies it, and there are 3 or 4 moments when the plot itself and key plot points and set pieces are directly taken from 2001. Now, there's no problem with the guy being like, I'm going to take inspiration from a film, but what the ending said to me, and again, this is opinionated and subjective, is I'm doing 2001, but I'm giving it heart. And that's arrogant, I think. That's arrogant, and I think that's a bit distressing slightly.
Okay, you are completely right in terms of that it does rip off a lot of visuals and sort of ideas and, you know, lore, I suppose, from 2001 Space Odyssey. But, I mean, we were discussing a while back, Nolan's Inception has a connection to a Japanese animated film, Paprika.
It's a fantastic film, and you should all watch it, by the way.
I disagree. It's visually very good, but it's an awful film. and I think this is crucial that I should remark here that like, it's fair for Nolan to be inspired. Creativity doesn't happen in a vacuum. He takes these ideas and he goes somewhere with them that is I think distinct enough from where he's inspired from. Like in the instance of Paprika, in Paprika, it's sort of they have these devices that go on your head that sort of, you know, you enter this dream world. So in that sense, it's very similar to Inception.
It's more than that. Somebody's dream.
You enter somebody's dream.
And you have a joint dreaming experience. Now, that's pretty close.
No, because let me finish. Okay, Paprika ends with... Its ending is a shriveled 70-year-old scientist, a morbidly obese 30-year-old man-child, and a 50-something-year-old detective reveal that they've all been vying for the affections of some 20-something-year-old woman, and everything gets solved after this sort of, like, almost like fairground ride of visuals that just, like, are completely nonsensical. Whereas Inception ends with, like, this heir to a business empire has an entirely false idea implanted in his head that it's going to rapidly change his life, and Nolan leaves us, like, questioning whether we're in reality or in the dream state still. I mean, obviously, to those who can notice things in the film, actually, you know where we are, but... To most people, they don't.
This is a subjective difference of opinion. Well. But to me, Paprika nails that in clarity, lack of clarity, not in clarity. In clarity is not a word. That lack of clarity that dreams have, and what Paprika aims to do is create a dream state. Whereas Nolan's filming technique and just his filmmaking philosophy is so very realist and so very gritty and grounded in reality. I even saw this credited. You know, he's very keen on film. He's very there's a theory that he simply doesn't trust digital because he can't hold it in his hands. And you know, look at the film, because the stuff that happens in Inception in the dream is physical. The you know, terror appears in the dream in the form of a train that literally bombards its way through the set.
That's original.
It's original, yes.
But I think the physicality of Nolan works really well.
Yes, I do, but I think so as well. But I think that it's a very different type of way of interpreting dreams, and I think one which is, if you're going for dreams on the screen, I don't think it clicks, you know, in the same way that Paprika's psychedelic, surreal... I mean, surrealism is dream, so that's self-fulfilling prophecy, but you know, that...
Harry, what are your dreams like? I mean, if your dreams are like Paprika... Fair enough, but
well,
for
they
me,
are.
But they're not like
your dreams have
my
plots.
Dreams.
My dreams don't have plots.
My dreams
have random occurrences.
But they don't have like these, you know, these giant, strange, twisting gardens, and you know, sort of like giant toy robots smashing cities. And none of that stuff. It's like
maybe I'm weird.
It might just be me. But I think, if anything, Nolan's interpretation of dreams and is far closer to reality than Paprika's was. Paprika was just. Like, let's throw in some nice visuals and, ooh, let's make this, you know, lampshade turn into a tree. Ah, so nice, so nice. but it just went nowhere very quickly, Paprika.
Okay.
I think.
Fair
That's
enough.
My opinion. I think Paprika's awful, to be honest.
You're listening to Screen.